Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome to News and Views. I'm your host, Rob Schofield. Well, after multiple fits and starts driven by state court efforts to fix gerrymandered congressional and legislative maps, North Carolina's 2022 primary elections finally concluded this past week. As is always the case in off-year primaries, overall voter turnout was extremely low, but for better or worse, that didn't prevent those who did turn out from rendering a host of momentous decisions, including selecting the nominees to fill Richard Burr's soon-to-be-vacated and vitally important U.S. Senate seat. Earlier this week, in order to get a better handle on the results, what they tell us about the state's electorate, and what months leading up to the November general election are likely to look like, I sat down with veteran Meredith College political scientist David McLennan. And as McLennan told me, the electoral battles in our deeply purple state are just getting started.
Well, Professor David McLennan, welcome back to News and Views. Good to have you back with us.
Always glad to be with you, Rob.
As we record this, it's the morning after. It's the morning after the May 17th North Carolina primary, another momentous election in North Carolina. I wrote a column this week pointing out that, though, that the turnout in these elections tends to be pretty darn low. I guess maybe there was a slight bump with this one, but it's still a pretty small number of North Carolinians who really turn out for these primary elections.
Yeah, I mean, historically, the last few midterm election cycles, it's averaged around 15%. You know, this may be toward 20%, but, you know, as you look at the results and try to interpret them, it's hard to say there's a mandate one way or the other with so few people. And some of the key races, and maybe we'll talk about specific races, you know, it tends to be an older kind of electorate, and that affected some of the candidates. And so you have a small number, but it's a very narrow range of voters.
It strikes me is that because maybe it's just the reality, of course, of politics, is that so many districts are drawn in a way that whoever wins the primary effectively wins the election. As a practical matter, we have districts in which there's hundreds of thousands of people being represented, but the decision gets made by really just a few thousand people or even a few hundred people in some legislative, state legislative districts. It's really a pretty narrow band of people who decide really the ultimate outcome.
Yeah. And so I think we've talked about this before, that it seems like every redistricting cycle we go through, we get fewer competitive seats, because that's really what you're getting at, is that when there's not a competitive seat, either a heavy D or heavy R seat, the primary is the general. And it could be a handful of voters are making decisions that really affect hundreds of thousands of people.
Right. And even put somebody in office for years to come. Ted Budd, who, of course, has won the Republican nomination to be a U.S. senator, won a special congressional primary, I believe it was, when he first got elected, what is it, 2016. Mm-hmm. There were like 30,000 people total voted in this whole congressional district. It was like 7% turnout, and he won amongst a dozen candidates. So that literally 6,000 people picked a congressman, you know, who's achieved great prominence in our state.
And, you know, is the Republican nominee for the Senate. So it's in a relatively short amount of time, if you extrapolate, those few thousand people really could elect one of the 100 people in the U.S. Senate.
Let's talk about yesterday's election. Or actually, it was an election that went on for weeks, as we had early voting and mail-in voting. What are some of the big takeaways from your perspective in the primary results?
Well, I think the importance of, on the Republican side, Donald Trump and the Club for Growth, which is an independent expenditure group. Not only did Ted Budd win handily, and I think if you'd asked me this two or three months ago, I would have predicted a much closer race, but also political newcomer Beau Hinds is now the Republican nominee in the 13th congressional district, and he's literally come out of nowhere. I mean, I think he moved into an apartment in his district a couple of weeks ago. But again, Donald Trump, his power is not absolute, because we've also lost a sitting member of Congress, Madison Cawthorn, to self-inflicted wounds, and the Trump endorsement could not overcome that. So I think money, endorsements, and, you know, if you really want to dive into the weeds, we can talk about Roy Cooper's involvement in a single legislative race that took out a member of the General Assembly.
We want to talk about that. That was a noteworthy state Senate race. Before we get there, let's talk about the big picture, of course, is the U.S. Senate. We've got a narrowly divided, evenly divided U.S. Senate. Every race is so critically important. Sherry Beasley has been the presumptive nominee in North Carolina since Jeff Jackson dropped out. She won handily. She's run a very sort of traditional almost wholesome and sort of, you know, non-controversial campaign, one presumes she's going to have a much tougher slog ahead, and she might have to perhaps develop some hard edges as she runs against Ted Budd this fall.
Well, we've already started seeing, even since the polls closed last night, some ads launched against her. And they have done really some of the same themes that we hear oftentimes, soft on crime. We'll see a very negative campaign going forward. And if she doesn't play by those rules, that could be difficult for her. So I think it'll be a well-funded campaign on both sides. We'll have independent money coming in because, as you said, the importance of this particular Senate race, like in a few other key states, could determine the who controls the U.S. Senate. So Beasley's run before statewide. She's got, you know, a good team on her side. So, you know, I would expect her to be a good candidate. I presume that Ted Budd will continue being a good candidate. So it's going to be a slog is a good term. It's going to be 5.5 months of a lot of TV advertising. We may or may not have debates. Ted Budd has avoided the Republican primary debates. He may do so in the general. So we may make our decisions based a lot on endorsements and advertising.
One presumes just that money will effectively be no object. There will be so much money flowing, I guess, mostly from out of state, both Democratic and Republican conservative money. I'm sure it'll be the most expensive Senate race we've ever had in North Carolina history. Is that a safe assumption?
I think that's a safe assumption. And it's funny, we say that almost every time we have a Senate race now. So, you know, it's been an arms race that doesn't look like it has any end. So, yeah. You know, if people were tired of the ads prior to yesterday's primary election, buckle in.
We're talking with Professor David McLennan, who's a professor of political science and director of the Meredith Poll at Meredith College. You've alluded to this previously. The big surprising, I think it's safe to say, somewhat surprising loser yesterday was former Governor Pat McCrory, who was pretty soundly trounced in the Republican Senate primary, even though he started that race with vastly superior name recognition. And I think even throughout the race, pretty solid support from what we might call the sort of mainstream Republicans, Art Pope, who served McCrory as budget director when he was governor. That campaign just never really got going.
From a real big picture perspective, the Republican Party has changed since Pat McCrory most recently won. And Pat McCrory didn't change along with it. He made allusions to trying to appeal to the Make America Great Again folks. But if you watched him in the last few debates, he went back to call himself a Reagan Republican, which 15 or 20 years ago would have made a lot of sense, but now it doesn't make sense. So I think his party left him. He didn't leave the party. But you also, the Donald Trump endorsement, the millions spent by Club for Growth attacking him for being liberal and various other things, made it very difficult for Pat McCrory.
And it's hard really to foresee what, if there is any future political step for McCrory. This is his third sort of high profile loss at the state level. He obviously was elected mayor of Charlotte several times, but it's sort of hard to envision any kind of scenario for a comeback, at least statewide. Can you see any path for him in that respect?
He made an allusion to that in his comments to his team and supporters. And he said that his future in elected office was probably not going to be there. So I never say never because, mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen too many things over the last dozen or so years to say, well, you know, he's never going to serve in public office again, but it's not an easy path. I mean, we've got a governor's race coming up in 2 years. You can't see the Republican Party changing in 2 years. You know, our next Senate race is still a few years off. You know, you doubt he would return to local politics.
And Mark Walker, another congressman who for a time had some pretty high profile prominence and seemed to be an up and comer, and at one point maybe even seemed like a formidable candidate in this race. He sort of has just really was way down in the numbers and looks like he too faces a tough road ahead if he wants to retain some sort of political career.
You know, I think we see a number of people in that same camp. I think Mark Walker, it's difficult to see his future. We saw someone else who had served in Congress, Renee Elmers, tried to restart her career. She did very poorly in her race. And again, I think with all of them, they are not the current generation of Republican candidates. You know, when people look at Mark Walker, they, even though he served relatively recently, you kind of say, well, he's old school. And that's not used in a very positive way. Pat McCrory, Renee Elmers. You know, we have a new group with Bo Hines and some other folks that represent the future of the Republican Party in North Carolina.
Coming up next, part two of my special extended conversation with Meredith College political scientist David McLennan. Don't go away.
Read and hear more about important news and policy issues at ncpolicywatch.com. This is News and Views.
Welcome back to News and Views. I'm Rob Schofield. In part one of my special extended conversation with Meredith College political science professor and pollster David McLennan, we surveyed some of the high-profile results from last Tuesday's North Carolina primary elections, including the outcome in the U.S. Senate primary, the rise of nominees Ted Budd and Sherry Beasley, the demise of former Governor Pat McCrory, and what McCrory's fall says about the rapidly changing nature of the Republican Party. In part two of our chat, we dug deeper into some of the other more hotly contested races, including an array of U.S. House primaries, the defeat of controversial far-right Congressman Madison Cawthorn, and Governor Cooper's unusual decision to choose sides in a state legislative primary. We also surveyed some of the substantive issues, like the battle over abortion rights, that figure to be front and center as the candidates look to November.
One person, of course, who many thought, who certainly aspired to represent the new wave of young Republicans was Madison Cawthorn. Of course, his reelection campaign finally ran out of steam, very narrowly defeated, actually, in the Republican primary in the 11th district by former state Senator Chuck Edwards. It's frankly rather startling that he only lost by 1,000 or so votes out of those cast, and so very close to getting reelected. But what does the future hold, do you think, for Madison Cawthorn? This is a very young man who's got a lot of personal issues, but presumably still some significant support from conservatives across the country.
For someone that young, he has some charisma for his supporters. You know, that's not going to go away. The question is, can he rehabilitate himself? And I mean that in all senses of the word, because I think there's some maybe some other issues going on there. But politically, you know, I don't think his career is over. You could see him landing a spot in a conservative media outlet for a couple years, and he'll take it from there. I think Cawthorn, the surprise, as you said, was despite all those problems, he got within 1,000 votes of winning the primary. And so you can't say you can write him off. He's not like Pat McCrory, who lost by 20 plus percentage points. He is, without the baggage, a prototype MAGA kind of Republican candidate.
Talking with Professor David McLennan of Meredith College. He runs the Meredith Poll. He's a professor of political science, one of our favorite guests on News and Views. We're talking about the outcome of the May 17th primary, the morning after. We've talked about Madison Cawthorn. One presumes that the person who defeated him, Senator Chuck Edwards, has a pretty easy path to victory over Jasmine Beach Ferraro, who's a county commissioner in that district. But that's a very strongly Republican district, right? It would be a real upset if Edwards were not now elected to Congress.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to take a lot of things turning around for Democrats generally. I don't know her that well. I presume she's a good candidate, but it's a difficult district. It does edge into Buncombe County, and she would need some kind of tremendous turnout. But Chuck Edwards runs well in Buncombe County, too. So I think it's a difficult task.
Let's talk about the one district that many people think could be a truly competitive race. You've alluded to the Republican who's prevailed there, another firebrand conservative, young conservative by the name of Bo Hines, who really has no political record of any kind. He'll be facing off in the new 13th district against Democratic State Senator Wiley Nickel. Is Hines the favorite here, or is this a truly split district, competitive district? What's your take on how that's looking as we look forward to the fall?
Well, the district itself is a true swing district. I mean, if we look back at the redistricting maps that we ultimately are using, it's the one district that could go either way without anything unusual happening. However, you know, the fundamental dynamics of this year, you know, right now, I'd have to say favor Republicans. That's not to say 5.5 months from now that we won't have inflation down. Joe Biden may see some approval ratings. You know, I think we also should look at our current governor, who is the most popular person in the state. And will he be active on the campaign trail? He could come into a district like that and inspire some people who would not otherwise vote. So I'd say right now it's probably favoring Hines, but it's not a fait accompli.
You've alluded a couple times now to Governor Cooper, who, as you also alluded to, had an impact on a state legislative race that drew some raised eyebrows, that he went against an incumbent Democratic lawmaker and helped propel his challenger to victory. Talk to us about that race and Cooper's role here as he goes into the second half of his second term as governor.
It's highly unusual for a North Carolina governor to be involved in a primary election. I mean, I'm trying to think if I can recall Jim Hunt or Mike Easley or Bev Perdue doing that, and I cannot, and you may have a better memory than me. But I think DeVere, who is the incumbent candidate that was not endorsed by Cooper, had some votes in the legislature that were against the Cooper agenda, and some pretty prominent votes. And so I think as he's looking to the next 2 years of his second term and wants to get some of his policy priorities in place, he decided that he needed a more progressive voice representing Cumberland County. And I think it's hard to know how much influence Cooper's endorsement had, but I would say it has some. And, you know, again, DeVere's not going to serve that district anymore.
He was rather handily defeated. Another race that's drawn a lot of attention is the race to, we've had a couple of retiring Democratic members of Congress, veteran Democrats, David Price, G.K. Butterfield have packed it in or will at the end of this year. And we've had two competitive races in Democratic primaries in the 4th District here in the Triangle area. State Senator Valerie Fouché ended up winning pretty handily in a fairly crowded field. I'm struck by the fact that Fouché will be, she seems in some ways to, it was sort of her turn. She was the politician who'd been around the longest, sort of worked her way up the pecking order. She's also 66, which is a little far along perhaps for a freshman member of Congress, but you know, times are changing. It's so hard to get ahead in Congress without lots of seniority. One wonders what kind of impact she'll be able to have there, but maybe I'm missing that. Anyway, any thoughts on Fouché's victory over Nita Allum?
It was a fascinating race in a couple of ways. Number one, because it sort of matched up Fouché, who has a long history in the legislature, who is, although considered to be progressive, is not as progressive as Allum. And Allum had the endorsement of Elizabeth Warren and some other folks. And I think if you look at both that district and District 1, where Don Davis won over Erica Smith, you're seeing that the less progressive candidate did not do as well as we might have thought. And so is this a sign that North Carolina is favoring more moderate candidates? Well, again, as we talked about earlier, primary elections tend to have an older kind of electorate. You know, I think Allum in particular needed a lot of young people to come out, and I see young people every day, and their interest in the primary election is just not the same as they'll have in November. So I think she was hurt by the electorate itself.
One presumes those are both safe Democratic seats. The Republicans have made some inklings of indications they might put a push on in the first district, but that even in a Republican year, that presumably would be a tough one for them to overcome Don Davis.
Right.
But it's not just about personalities. It'll be about issues as we look forward to November. And one issue, of course, that's really taken a front seat in recent days and weeks and looks as if it probably will continue is the future of reproductive freedom in our country and perhaps the expected demise of the Roe versus Wade decision. This seems perhaps to have injected a little bit of energy into Democrats across the country. Is that something you can foresee having an impact in North Carolina if, in fact, the U.S. Supreme Court decides to reverse Roe versus Wade and end any federal guarantee of abortion rights?
Well, we've seen protests around the state in Raleigh, Charlotte, and some other places since the leaked opinion was made public. You know, there's some energy right now. The question is, will that be enough to help Democrats overcome some of the other issues? Inflation, if that stays high, that affects people in a very obvious and direct manner, where abortion for many women or men is a right that they never exercise. So it may be that kind of issue that energizes certain segments of the Democratic electorate, like young people. You know, it's going to be the kind of election year where if Democrats can't turn out the less consistent voters in their block, they are going to lose. And so it may be enough to kind of help some Democrats in key races. But again, there's so much speculation in the last couple of weeks about not only will that opinion be final, but second, who will it help the most? So anyway, I think we'll be tracking that in the fall to see how the mood of the electorate is, but it's clearly a big change.
We're coming to the end of our time with Meredith College Professor of Political Science, David McLennan, discussing the outcome of the May 17th primary and looking forward to the November election. I guess another issue that seems to be front and center, and it's sort of mystifying to me a little bit, because I've seen some interesting commentaries that point out the fact that while inflation does seem to be temporarily high and it's a global phenomenon, the U.S. economy is in the midst of a truly unprecedented economic recovery. I mean, we are in all-time low unemployment. Incomes are up, even adjusting for inflation, wages are up. But so far, it seems that the critics of the Biden administration have been very effective in banging on this inflation message, even if perhaps the vast majority of Americans are measurably better off than they were a couple of years ago. One presumes that that's something they're going to keep banging on over the next 6 months.
And Republicans will make that a central part of their campaign. I mean, I think this issue is something that people face every time they pull up to a gas pump and or every time they go buy a loaf of bread or whatever. And the incumbent party always pays the price for that sort of thing. You know, we can point out what happened in the 70s. It was a real bad time for President Carter because of inflation. But, you know, you're right. It is a growing economy. You know, economists will say we have 11 million unfilled jobs. We actually, you know, it's putting wage pressure out there. People are, you know, doing better with their paychecks, but I think it's the hit you in the face kind of message from the gas pump, from the grocery store, and from, you know, if you have to re-sign a rental lease, that's causing that to be a big issue.
Well, we will see. There is going to be, as you say, our airwaves will be flooded over the next 6 months with people with competing messages over this and an array of issues and probably a lot of attack ads against politicians you may not even know much about. So there's a lot to learn over the next 6 months. And fortunately, we'll be able to call on you again, David, to keep us up to date sometime over the summer. We hope you take care, stay safe. Thanks for doing this, and we'll talk to you again real soon.
Thanks, Rob. Stay safe as well.
Coming up next, an even closer look at the outcomes in the U.S. Senate primaries. Stay with us.